It's a tight turnaround ahead of Game Week 23. We reflect on another Darwin rollercoaster on Wednesday night. We discuss our City spots ahead of their upcoming double as we ask the all-important question, how do we get Haaland back in? Welcome back to the FPL pod, where we are almost 8/10 to be precise through game week 22 with West Ham versus Bournemouth and Wolves versus Manchester United still to come tonight. We are back in our usual Thursday morning slot. Good to be back with you. Kelly Summers here alongside my trusty pair of Julian Neron and Sam Bonfield. And Jules, it's still going pretty well for you.
Hello, Kelly. Good to have you back. Jota time. Here we go. Almost very much Darwin time, becoming the first player in Premier League history to hit the woodwork four times in the same game, which when you own him, is just mind-blowing, but not in a bad way. I mean, in a bad way, but also in a good way, because the guy is just an absolute legend. And owning Darwin is just a roller coaster, which is also part of the game. We play also for those kind of emotions. But watching Liverpool and Darwin's performance against Chelsea on Wednesday night was pretty special, because he could have had a quadruple easily and Liverpool could have scored 10 goals easily. And in the end, it's a bit frustrating if you own him, but overall, it was a really good game week. 55 points with three more players, Senesi, Areola and Solanke to play. So hopefully I go over the 60 points and I'd be very happy with that.
Sam, I thought I'd try once again to get it out of the way. Jota time. I did turn my volume down because it was too loud and I forgot just how jubilant he was going to be. It's more and more painful each time we watch those Jota goals go in, isn't it? How was your game week? Let's move on from that.
It definitely is, but it could have been far, far worse actually than it is this morning. So my game week's actually going all right so far. Obviously brought in KDB this week like you did, Kels. I think we both made the same transfer.
Just to point out, I wasn't on the podcast on Monday. I hadn't listened to the podcast at the point of doing that transfer. I did not copy before I get accused of that.
For once.
I wasn't going to accuse you this morning, but yeah, we made the same transfer and I think it was the logical transfer to make this week, wasn't it? He was the third highest most transferred in player ever in a game week this week, KDB. He was incredibly popular. So I think it was an obvious decision to make. When I saw his name on the starting team sheet, I was like, okay, now this is boding well. My City boy's actually doing me really proud with KDB getting the assist. Should have captained Alvarez, but I was never really that close to captaining Alvarez, particularly with the news that Haaland was back, because you just never really know how many minutes he's going to get. But yeah, actually a decent game week so far. I've still got my goalkeeper to play tonight, so we'll see how that pans out, because, you know, my luck with goalkeepers this season. But so far, so good, and a nice green arrow for the first time in a long time.
Will we ever get through a podcast, Jules, without Sam mentioning a goalkeeper or her goalkeeper?
Unlikely.
I don't know, but the worrying thing is that she's got the same as you and me, I think. So for one...
No, I'm different, I think.
Oh, you're not Areola?
No, I'm not Areola.
Okay, so we are, me and Sam are Areola. So I hope that for once she doesn't jinx it and that her goalkeeper, who's also mine, gets a decent amount of points.
Unlikely, Jules, I'm afraid.
I sold Areola weeks ago just so I didn't have to be part of this and didn't want to be part of Sam's curse. No, I'm joking. I sold him when he was injured and I actually didn't need to. Anyway, there is, of course, a really tight turnaround between game week 22 and 23 again. So we're kind of acting as a preview and a review because there is no off the bench. So a few of the big talking points. Sam, we kind of have to start with Brighton, don't we? And I'm coming to you on this because you obviously went for Pascal Gross a few weeks ago when the numbers were so, so good, the underlying numbers. Mm. He hasn't performed. And neither of the rest of Roberto De Zerbi's team really recently.
No, they're really off it this season, aren't they? And I think sometimes they have these good weeks, and they've had a couple, to be fair, with the first clean sheet coming against West Ham and then a decent game week following. And I think, you know, when they've had a couple of weeks where they were looking better again with the Stupinian coming back, there was a lot of movement. And I bought in two of them a couple of weeks ago because it felt like Brighton were maybe just starting to find themselves again. As it goes, I was quite confident about having two Brighton players heading into this week against Luton. I was thinking this is a good opportunity for a couple of differentials because neither of Pascal Gross or Estupiñán are that heavily owned. Estupiñán concedes the three goals, then goes off on the 46th minute, which was wonderful. That's always what you want, isn't it, when you own a player in FPL? And then Pascal Gross, it's just one of those really annoying ones, and I can't see me holding him now after the way that Brighton have been performing. The difficulty is that, you know, I bought these guys in for a reason because the fixtures are really nice and there was an opportunity with them to pick a couple of players that were lowly owned with really great fixtures in a team that are really attacking usually, but it's just not quite going to plan so far.
Yeah, it's been really strange, hasn't it? I was really confused with the Estupiñan 0 points. I knew they'd conceded a lot of goals, but then you look and you're like, oh, what a nightmare. Maybe I should have kept Tariq Lamptey after all. At least I wasn't spending quite as much money and he could go on my bench. Jules, let's talk a little bit about Arsenal. Big win for them again in midweek. Bukayo Saka, you kind of said on a pod a couple of weeks ago that potentially if you were on a wild card, you might not have Saka. But a goal involvement for him and rewarding the patience of those of us that do still have him. And he is still highly owned, of course.
Yeah, massively. And it was a good performance, to be fair to him and to the team, I think, even if the end was a bit shaky because Forrest scored, pulled one back. I thought it was very comfortable for Arsenal in possession especially, but also out of possession. Before the Liverpool game at the weekend on Sunday, that was very good. That's what they needed for Gabriel Jesus to be as influential and for Saka to score on his wrong foot, which he rarely uses, to be fair. And I was very happy, not just that he finished with his right foot, but also that he controlled the ball with the inside of his right foot when the ball came from the left-hand side, something that Pep Guardiola is very insistent with his City players, for example. So that was really good, I thought, from Saka. And from Arsenal overall, I don't know if Emile Smith Rowe, for example, will keep that place as a starter in that sort of number 8 on the left-hand side for the Liverpool game. But I thought he did okay. And overall, I think from an Arsenal point of view, despite that late goal they conceded, it was a very positive performance. And when Saka is in it, we said it all the time, they need Odegaard to maybe step up a little bit more now, and Martinelli as well. But at least when Saka and Gabriel Jesus are in that kind of form, it's much easier for them.
Could have done without them conceding though, couldn't we?
Yeah, for sure. All the Saliba and Gabriel owners were very disappointed because he looked so comfortable. I mean, it's not that they were very comfortable and maybe too comfortable. And that's how I think Saliba got caught on that goal. They should have defended much better on that left-hand side to start with. So yeah, it's disappointing because that was an easy clean sheet, I think, for Arsenal. Saliba, Raya, Gabriel, Zinchenko, whoever you have, White. It was pretty easy. And in the end, it was frustrating to see those points go.
By the way, Saka, I was saying a lot of people have kept patience with him. He was the 7th most transferred out player ahead of game week 22. How those managers are probably regretting it now. Also, my other half, Max, we've spoken about him on this podcast before, had a brilliant season last year. Not quite so good this year, but still doing all right. He forgot to change his team and he kept Saka as captain.
Wow.
And I had KDB as captain. So that is incredibly jammy. He texted me and said, oh no, I've missed the deadline. I would have changed it off Saka after last week. FPL for you. Anyway, elsewhere, Sam, Newcastle not had too many away wins this season, got one in the cup at the weekend, first team to win at Villa Park this weekend, an assist for Kieran Trippier, but a lot of people are de-invested in Newcastle really now, other than maybe Anthony Gordon. You've got him like I have, haven't you?
Yeah, and I was a bit disappointed to see him not get the assist for that Fabian Schär goal.
Come on.
It is what it is.
Come on, Jules.
You can't sit here and talk about second
Jules,
assists.
You would be complaining if you were a Gordon owner.
I don't know what you're talking about, but that was never going to be an assist anyway.
No.
Well, I would have liked it to have been. Let's put it that way.
Me too.
But yeah, I do have Anthony Gordon and I did play him this week because I just think that with players like Anthony Gordon, you know that they're always going to be involved. And I think moving forward now with Isak picking up an injury in that game as well, Wilson also flagged in the game, we saw Gordon go up top or nothing came of it in terms of FPL points, but it feels like still a decent option to own. And I think he, for me, is somebody that I'm not prepared to sell yet. A lot of managers were getting off the Newcastle defence because there just haven't been enough clean sheets and we haven't seen as many attacking returns for them. And this time around, again, we still didn't get the clean sheet. But of course, Trippier getting an assist means that, you know, the owners that have stayed loyal to him would have been happy with that one. But I don't know. I think long term, I'm still not convinced that Trippier is quite worth the budget that you have to spend on him, particularly when we're seeing other premium assets coming back into the game who you're going to want to own. There's going to have to be quite serious conversations about how you distribute the budget around your squad over the coming weeks. And I'm not sure that Trippier will make it into a lot of people's wildcard teams when they play those.
Is Anthony Gordon still the only player that you would invest in from Newcastle, Sam? I mean, I've got Dubravka at the moment as well. So it was FPL giving with one hand when Ollie Watkins scored, but taking with the other when it wiped out my Dubravka clean sheet.
I think so. I think Anthony Gordon, for me, feels like the only one that I'd want right now. That doesn't necessarily mean long term that I wouldn't invest more heavily in Newcastle. But with the way that they are playing, and actually I thought they were excellent against Aston Villa, but that was the first time I've watched them in a while and thought you were really excellent. So if that continues, then maybe I'll look to invest a bit more heavily as we move forward. But right now, I think there's so many great options, particularly in the midfielder slots and in the forward slots. And even defensively, there's a lot of really, really attractive options right now. So Newcastle, for me, feel like it's Anthony Gordon. If you really want to hold Trippi because you've got loads of budget, then fair enough. But if you're looking to redistribute, then I think just having Gordon is okay.
I mentioned it then, Jules. May have been disappointing for me with my Dubravka clean sheet, but Ollie Watkins was the fifth most sold, over 312,000 transfers out. We've spoken about him on this podcast, the fact that we're running out of patience and maybe there's better options. It was nice to see him get that goal, wasn't it?
It was really nice, and he should have had a second. He had a second that was rightly disallowed because he was a tiny, tiny, tiny offside, but that was millimetres. And that second goal was, the finish was great. And I think this is it. Maybe in the last few weeks, those kind of chances were not there, just didn't come about as much as before from an Aston Villa point of view and an Ollie Watkins point of view. But when they're there, he's just still so clinical. So when Haaland coming back now, we will all have, and we will discuss it very soon, we all have a big choice to make on who you get rid of to bring back Haaland in your front three. And for a few of us, it would be either Solanke or Watkins, if you keep Darwin, in my case, for example. And it's a tough one because I think Solanke also, despite a bit of a dip, has that kind of efficient side in his game this season, a bit like Watkins. So it's the one, try to pick the right one to get rid of, really, to bring Haaland back. But certainly Watkins made a case for himself for keeping him in the team and with that performance because it was tough for Villa, as you said. And it's a humiliating defeat for them who hadn't lost for over a year at home. But he was, I thought, the only bright thing really in that Villa team.
Yeah, I agree. And looking at it now, the fixtures for him, Sheffield United away, it's going to be hard to sell him ahead of that one. Then Manchester United at home, Fulham away, Forest, Luton, then it goes Spurs, West Ham and Wolves. So quite a nice run. So it's quite timely that he scored. We'll talk about forwards in a little while. But Sam, we do have to check in on Spurs because I tell you what, that was a brilliant game last night. Probably a bit nervier than you'd have liked at the end. You must have been relieved when that full-time whistle went. Uh-huh. But it was brilliant. And the start of that second half in particular opened up some nice FPL assets and particularly nice to welcome back James Maddison.
Oh, wasn't it just? So much better having James Maddison back in. It felt... It feels like a real boost for Spurs every time one of these players comes back from injury. And of course, every time they come back from injury, it also feels like a nice FPL boost comes back again because suddenly you kind of look at the defence and you think, okay, they look more solid now that everyone's back. Now, actually, in reality, do they look more solid? Well, I thought Udogie was having a bit of a nightmare down his side last night and that led to a lot of opportunities for Brentford. But I was kind of expecting that because even Tony's back and the relationship that he's forming with Mopai is looking quite good actually moving forward over the fixtures that they have. And given that they've got the double game week coming up, I think that, you know, he's becoming a really good option again for us. But James Maddison coming back immediately getting the assist, he was my differential last week. So yay for an actual points return from my differential for the first time in forever.
So lucky. That was just a sideway pass.
That's his response to everything I've noticed.
Why?
So lucky.
It's like just sideway pass. This is all it is. There's
Jules,
not...
you can't always pass forwards. Sometimes you have to pass sideways.
I know, but that is frustrating. Then when that gives points in our differential table to Sam, when really, like, I could have made that pass. You know, it's just like... Anyway, let's move on.
But I think, you know, he looked really good again, didn't he? And didn't look like he was having any issues coming back from injury until right at the end when he had a little bit of cramp going on. But he played incredibly well. And I think, you know, the relationship with him and the front three, it will continue to be as good as it was in the early part of the season. So I really, 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 really want to buy Maddison back already. Like, it was one of those where I watched him for about 45 minutes and was like, oh, there's going to be a points hit incoming this week. Because it's just one of those that I think moving forward, I know I'm going to want. So I think he's a really nice option. If you're a Porro owner, just annoying last night, no clean sheet, obviously no attacking returns for him, particularly when on the other side Udogie got some, which infuriated me because I know a certain member of this podcast has him in his team. But yeah, a good performance from Spurs. And I do think that there's some nice options there.
More about Richarlison, Sam, as well, because he's hit the form that I know, I'm sure you've been longing for him to hit for some time now.
Yeah, absolutely. 7 and 7 for him. And Werner, 2 and 2 for him. Like, those two are actually looking quite decent. And Richarlison, you know, I said on here a couple of weeks ago that I wouldn't go there because I just wasn't sure about the consistency of him. And I wasn't really sure how Spurs would cope without Son at the Asian Cup, without Maddison as we were then. But actually what we've seen from Richarlison is a real stepping up in his game. He's been playing so much better. And I think the first half, he wasn't great. I think Spurs as a whole got a bit of a rocket from Postecoglou at halftime, and he came in the second half and was so, so much better. So Richarlison looking like a really nice, cheap way into Spurs if you don't want to pay the level of money that you have to invest to get Maddison. And of course, with Son progressing in the Asian Cup, he won't be back yet either. So another good opportunity to stay at the cheaper end of investment in Spurs.
Yeah, I'm now wondering which midfielder, though, that I can sacrifice for him. I was thinking if Saka blanked, maybe we could go there, but it feels hard to let him go now as well. So we're going to have more decisions to make in that area of the pitch as well. As for Manchester City, now it's a real shame, isn't it, that our old friend Ian isn't on the podcast this week, because he went bold. He brought in KDB and Haaland, captained Haaland. His theory being, he said that he knew he was going to want him at some point, so he was just going to bring him in and get on with his life, I think was his phrase. Because as we've heard on this podcast before, when he didn't own him before, it was hurting him for quite some time. Well, mixed, I think it's safe to say, and that's me being kind. Kevin De Bruyne did get the start. Haaland was on the bench. Kevin De Bruyne got the assist. Haaland got nothing after coming on after 71 minutes. Now, yes, he may be getting ahead of the curve, but that would be frustrating. Sam, like me, you captained De Bruyne. Good to see him get a return, although I was gutted when he went off.
Yeah, I was too. I was like, oh, come on, just give us a little bit more time. But then in reality, I wasn't necessarily expecting him to even get 71 minutes. So the fact that he got 71 minutes, got the start, I was like, yes, that's a good tick. The fact that he got 71 minutes made me happy, but I was kind of like, oh, there's definitely more goals in this game for Man City. And when he was replaced by Haaland, I literally spent the rest of that match. So I had them on one screen while I was watching Spurs on the other. And I was like, I can't actually look at that because it's really stressing me not having Haaland. And I think, you know, that's why in some ways Ian will be really frustrated this morning, because of course he sold Alvarez to do the Haaland thing, which would have really hurt this week. But watching Haaland come on, I mean, he didn't look fully ready necessarily. He, you know, he had a couple of opportunities which normally he'd have slotted away and he didn't. However, it was horrible watching Manchester City with Haaland on the pitch and not owning him. So moving forwards, I do think that that's going to have to be a priority now, because we're starting to see him come back. And I'm really happy to have KDB, but not having Haaland felt really stressful for that last 20 minutes of that game last night.
Okay, and of course, no clean sheet for Manchester City, no Kyle Walker as well. Kevin De Bruyne actually picked up a bonus point, which he wasn't getting before Burnley scored. So thank you very much to Vincent Kompany's team for keeping on going until the end. That's what we like to see. I was going to read this earlier in the podcast, Jules, but this is remarkable. You mentioned Darwin Nunez, the roller coaster that you've been on board with for some time. These were his stats against Chelsea. Hit the post 4 times, which blows my mind how much this player hits the post. Missed a penalty. He had an XG of 1.45 and expected assists of 0.29. He missed 2 big chances. He created a big chance. He got an assist, 11 shots on goal. Got the yellow card just to knock another point off.
Of course.
So overall, got 2 points.
It's incredible.
I don't even have anything to say on that. I'm just going to move on. I'm just going to leave that tweet and those stats there for you to mull over.
But just before, there was before the assist, that came quite late in the game. So after all those chances missed, everything, he was on -2. And because he played so well in the game. And yeah, he should have scored and he didn't score. And we can go back again about the fact that he's not clinical enough. But still, -2 for what was still a very good performance in a very dominant Liverpool win and team was crazy. So at least he got a little bit of what he deserved with the assist that bumped into from -2 to +2, really. But when you think that he should have had easily 1, 2 goals, maybe even 3, and get a massive point haul, he almost also finished with a -2. And for the ones who captained him, and there's a few that we actually know very well, it would have been -4, which is really, when you think about the game that he had, like, yeah, mad.
Funny though. If you
it was really funny. Like, not owning him, it was really funny. And when you, like, those four times hitting the woodwork, that was the most ever in a Premier League match since it started being recorded in 2003-2004. It's also the most shots anybody has had in a Premier League match since Ødegaard against Bournemouth in March last year. So he was just, I can't work out whether incredibly, incredibly unlucky is the way I would describe Darwin in that game, or just very typically Darwin. Like, it's just one of those Darwin performances. Yeah.
Both, yeah. At least he has the chances.
I also feel like we've been saying it for so long, ever since he's been in the Premier League, that when he starts to score, I mean, he does score, it's not like he doesn't score, he's going to be electric and he's going to be so consistent. I still think that player is in there, and I still think eventually he's going to come good week in, week out. But you just got to ride through the rocky patch and you'll get the rewards in the end, I'm sure, Jules. Me and Sam can't wait for that. Anyway, Conor Bradley at the other end of the pitch, he was the real star of the show last night, wasn't he? A goal, two assists and a clean sheet. He's just 4 million in FPL, but have we missed the boat a bit with this one, Jules, given the fact that Trent Alexander-Arnold's returning?
Yeah, I think so, maybe. Although, they might be aware where they can both play in this team. I can't see it, really. And I think Conor Bradley would be a very good replacement on number two for Trent and can always come on for the last 20 minutes and Trent moves into midfield. But we've talked before about the triangle between Trent, Szoboszlai and Salah when Salah is going to be fit again, which has been Liverpool's main asset this season, really. So I don't think Klopp will touch that now that Trent is fit again, really. But it's been a great cameo from Conor Bradley. He was also very good in the FA Cup game against Arsenal, that win away at the Emirates. Very, very promising when you're only 20 years of age. And his time will come, whether that's at Liverpool or somewhere else, where he has to move a bit like what Nico Williams did, because Trent is there to stay and is so good already. But that was great to see. And for such a young player to take those kind of opportunities in the Premier League is not a given. So well done to him. But in terms of the game, the FPL itself, I don't think we should invest in him simply because Trent is going to be back and Trent will start ahead of him every single time.
I really enjoyed Jurgen Klopp's post-match comments, not really related to FPL, but he said when they had the Premier League break a couple of weeks ago, he was on holiday and he bumped into some Bolton fans and they asked for Conor Bradley back and he said, too late. Imagine him now playing for Bolton. Wouldn't be very fair, would it? Elsewhere, captaincy stats, they were very interesting, actually. If we take a look at the six most captained players, all of them returned except for Haaland, who was the most captained player. Over 3.1 million managers gave him the armband after, of course, Pep Guardiola asked in his press conference by our very own Ian Irving if he would be available, and he said he was. He certainly lured people in, didn't he? But this makes it more interesting, doesn't it, Sam? The fact that now people want to go to Haaland, but if you're brave enough not to, particularly at the moment, you can get rewarded.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that those Haaland numbers did rise a lot after Ian questioned Pep, because, of course, the fact that he was then available, I think a lot of managers who had Haaland still left in their team or who went and moved early on him to bring him in would have captained him. And, you know, he took a price rise as well going into game week 22. So that's a bit frustrating now, because I would have liked to have been able to buy him back at the cheaper price. But I do think that as we head a little bit further into the season, though, now we will start to see his captaincy stats rise more and more, because people will just revert back. But what we have seen over the weeks that we've not had him is that going different sometimes actually is the right thing to do. So you're going to have to play it fixture by fixture. We're going to have to see on his availability and what Pep's got to say about the weekend's fixtures and whether we expect Haaland to start, because there are other players in that Man City team who could feasibly hand the armband to, and it shouldn't necessarily just be an automatic, right, Haaland gets the armband. I think, you know, we should consider whether there are better options elsewhere as well.
Yeah, and it also just makes it more fun, doesn't it? I love now checking everyone's teams after the deadline and seeing who they've captained. Just makes it a little bit more interesting, especially when you and I, well, Sam, the problem is you and I bring in the same player and then captain the same player.
Yeah, we must think the same way.
Yeah.
You must somehow. Yeah, that's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a sixth sense.
I'm just saying that as if I copy. I did not copy. I didn't know.
No. I'm just saying that.
It's just the obvious.
I was gutted this week because obviously I got... I captained Jota. Jota time!
Ambry.
You know, Ian's not here. Can we have Ian instead?
But no, 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 we can't have Ian instead because next week I'm going to be off again.
I remember people that I kept in Jota.
This is the reason that we've had Ian on the podcast recently, because I can't be on every week with Jules. It's too annoying. Nothing's too...
So you leave me here with him?
Nothing's too the fact that I've got a young baby. Just quickly, Sam, before we move on to my favourite part of the show as well, the pod mini league.
Oh, great.
You took a look at some of the underlying stats from game week 22 so far. I just wondered which ones in particular stood out to you.
Do you know what? There were some really interesting stats so far and players coming up that you wouldn't necessarily normally expect. And I think, you know, the likes of the Luton players and the Fulham players, there's a lot of them in the highest stats for things like chances created, like Ross Barkley. Kearney and Bailey were the players that created the most chances so far. Now, when you look at the underlying stats for a game week like that and you see players that you don't necessarily normally see, that doesn't necessarily mean that we should then go all in and invest on those assets. It can be a bit of a blip. And I think, you know, the Luton game against Brighton was very unexpected. But then there are other players that kind of really stand out. Obviously, Tony was up there with shots. He had 5 shots across the game week. That was only beaten by Gabriel Jesus from Arsenal. And Eze was also up there as well, although again picked up an injury, didn't he, in that one, so we're going to have to see how he is ahead of the weekend. But some interesting players appearing in the top stats, not necessarily ones I'd invest in apart from Tony probably, but other options are starting to kind of show themselves. And if we see them regularly appearing in the top of the underlying stats, then maybe they are players that we want to look to invest in, but just hold fire on them if it's just one good week of stats.
Okay, well, on to our mini league then, as I said. If Darwin has scored that penalty, Jules would actually be 3 points off the top 10K. I think maybe I'm quite grateful he didn't score the penalty. Rather than -2 for missing the penalty, it would have been 5 points for the goal and then 4 points doubled for Captain Jota with the assist. So that was a 15-point swing. Even with that, it's a pretty good week for Jules. With 3 players still to play on Thursday evening, he's got a big smile on his face. We don't need a comment there, Jules, I don't think. Myself and Sam have 1 player left to go. We both, as we've mentioned, did Salah to Kevin De Bruyne. I have got Solanke, you've got Areola. Is that correct, Sam?
That's right. I've benched Solanke this week. Could come back to haunt me.
I benched Cole Palmer over Solanke, which is going all right so far. But Solanke could well blank as well. Ian's got 2 players left, by the way, if you're still following his team as well. As we mentioned, he brought Haaland in, unfortunately, at the expense of Alvarez. I am 10 points behind Jules now. I've made up a 2-point gap so far, but that could all change tonight with him having more players to play. Sam's 30 points behind me and Ian is 34 points behind her. The one good thing about this mini league is I'm getting far better at on-the-spot maths. On to our overall FPL pod mini league. Michael has currently lost his spot at the top of the FPL pod mini league. He's 5th, but he has only had 7 players play so far. And by the start of game week 23, he could go back top. Our new leader, congratulations to him, is Itai with his team Dynamo Baruch. He captained Richarlison and he sits 33rd in the world overall, but he has had all of his players playing game week 22, so there could still be a little bit of a swing. Okay, we've spent far too long discussing what's already happened, so we're going to have to squeeze in a preview up here, and it's something that we have mentioned briefly already. Are we going to need to change our forward spots? Are we going to potentially even need to rebalance our sides? Of course, that is coming off the back of Haaland being back in the Manchester City squad on Wednesday and coming on for those last 20 minutes. We're all going to be panicking, aren't we? Jules, are you already looking at a way to get him back in?
Yeah, I mean, because as you know how good a planner I am,
yep, that's what
I've got
you.
The money in the bank. Yeah, exactly. But somehow, I'm not really sure how it happened, but the money is there waiting for me to bring Erling Haaland back. And I think we know how this is going. He's a bit like what happened with KDB. He's not going to start. I would not think that he starts away at Brentford on Monday night. I think it will be gradually that he gets more minutes, which is the right thing to do when you come back from a kind of a longish injury. 2 months is a long time for Erling Haaland, who is never really that ain't that much injured, or certainly not for that long. So you would expect him maybe not to start again, but to play a little bit more. But still, as we've been saying so many times, Haaland, even playing 20 minutes, 25 minutes, could still score 3 goals. So I think he's a must-have now, and we all need to find a way of bringing back a new team, whether you already have that money. And like me, you're a great planner. Well done to you. It's easy to bring him in. You just need to choose who you get rid of. If you don't have the money just yet, then take a minus four, a minus eight, whatever it takes really to bring Haaland back.
Sam, that is the question, isn't it? Who do you get rid of? Because I was thinking Ollie Watkins would be an easy sell, but then he scored. And as I mentioned, hard to sell him ahead of the fixtures. He's got the same with Alvarez. We saw Ian do it last week. That felt like an obvious move, but then he goes and does that and makes our decision even harder.
Yeah, I'm struggling a little bit with who goes. I don't think I want to sell Watkins. I feel like with Watkins, he, apart from Haaland, is the highest owned forward in the game. And selling somebody that's got a very high ownership should be really carefully considered before you do it. Because if they return, the impact of that on your overall rank can be huge. And you shouldn't necessarily pick somebody just to shield against other players in the game. But it also should be a consideration when it comes to whether you should sell them or not. I'm not convinced I want to sell Watkins just yet. Could have been a brace were it not for, you know, a couple of inches in that game against Newcastle. But then on the flip side of that, I've got Alvarez, who would have been the player I sold if I'd moved early on Haaland this week, a bit like Ian. But I just didn't want to do that because, as Jules said, I would expect the minutes to be kind of managed back in the same way that they have been with Haaland. And so selling Alvarez felt not the right thing to do, given that I would expect him to therefore get the minutes that Haaland wasn't. Of course, after his brace, it's very hard to now sell him. But I also don't really feel like I can sell Solanke either because he's going to have a double coming up and that's going to make getting Haaland back in really, really difficult. I think in the end, it probably will be Alvarez that I sacrifice, but it would be really reluctant.
And let's not forget that Alvarez is going to move back to a different position, obviously, because now he plays where Erling Haaland is going to play. So, and we've explained many times before, when Haaland and Alvarez play, Alvarez is more of a kind of a facilitator in this team, more than a goal scorer, more than the guy that should be at the end of the chances created by the team. That doesn't mean that Alvarez will stop scoring, but he should get less opportunities to score because his position on the pitch would be quite different, to be fair, to what it was when Haaland was obviously injured.
Would you consider selling Solanke? The issue I have is that, Jules, maybe it's not a problem for you because you've kept all that money in the bank, but going from Solanke to Haaland, Solanke's 7.1, Haaland's 14, it's like double the budget as well. So unless you've been really clever and kept the money in the bank, it's quite hard. Where do you sit on Solanke? I know he hasn't played this week.
The thing with Solanke is just, I think the season has been exceptional so far. I just wonder how much better he can go, in the sense that we were all amazed at how well he's done in the first half of the season, pretty much. And I think even himself as a trend might be a little bit difficult. And to be fair, his stats have gone down since he had that incredible goal scoring streak, the win that they had at Old Trafford, all of that. It's a little bit more difficult. I mean, they got spanked by Liverpool at home in the last league game before the West Ham game, which is tonight as we record this. Before that, they lost the game at Tottenham and he didn't really have an influence there. And yeah, he scored against Fulham, which was the last win, on the penalty, and that was only a penalty. But the hat-trick against Forest felt, to be fair to him, like just the pinnacle of his season so far. And I'm just not sure how much he can reproduce that. I've got more faith, backing up of what Sam said about Watkins, than Solanke in this Bournemouth team.
Yeah, it's really tricky, isn't it? I think if I was a Darwin owner, I think I'd want to jump off the roller coaster as well, Sam. What do you think are the three, or who should I say, the three best forwards to own in the game currently? If you were playing a wild card now, what would you put in those? What? Why do I keep talking about these players if they aren't people? Who would you put in those positions?
It's difficult. I think Haaland and Watkins would be my first two picks. The third one, I think, is much more contentious because Darwin, I think, is a good option, but he would just infuriate me and I'm not sure I could cope with owning Darwin. I don't know how Jules does it, really. Solanke obviously will have a double coming up, so that, because they've got to have their fixture against Luton rearranged, so that also weighs in on my kind of thinking, is that at some point you're going to have that opportunity to have him there. You've got players like João Pedro at Brighton. If you could trust Brighton, maybe you'd go there. I do wonder whether we are moving towards having like the two more expensive ones in Watkins and Haaland, and then somebody that sits in that kind of slightly cheaper Solankins, maybe Cunha from Wolves bracket, because that would enable you to go very heavy with the premiums in midfield as well, which feels like a sensible strategy. So I think if I was doing it right now, I'd do Haaland and Watkins, and I'd it would be a toss-up between Solanke and Cunha in that third spot.
Yeah, it doesn't really help, I suppose, that the midfield is a bit of a minefield at the moment. It kind of depends where you want to redistribute your budget. Especially also if now with Trent Alexander-Arnold coming back as well, that's a premium defender spot going too. Could you maybe, Sam, adjust your midfield to fit Haaland in? Do you think potentially people could be looking at a wild card to try and I'm stuttering over this because what I'm trying to say is, do you basically have to scrap it and start again with a wild card?
Don't think you have to scrap it. I think you can absolutely scrap it and go for a wild card, but I don't think you have to, because I think that there are a number of options that you could go to. So like if you've already got Foden in there, then you're set up with him. If you've already, like we have got KDB, then that's fine. You're set with him. I think, you know, with Salah being away and we still don't really know how long that injury is going to be, then you can do what Jules has done and go for Jota instead. And that helps you out there because we're saving money. Even with Spurs, you know, we spoke earlier about Maddison and Richarlison. They're both significantly cheaper than having Son. So you can redistribute that cash around, stay invested in the teams that are performing well and that you want to, you know, target in, but you don't necessarily have to spend the most expensive player in the game or in that position for that team. And I think that's helpful to us. I think what you would need to kind of consider with the midfield is how many of the cheaper options. So a few weeks ago, we were talking about wanting maybe to have Garnacho or Gordon or Palmer and having maybe a couple of them, because that meant you spent less money in the midfield and you could have the three heavy hitters up top, you know, when people were moving towards Watkins, Haaland and Darwin. I think now potentially we're starting to see that shift again, as with players like KDB coming up, people want to have more investment there. I suppose the other player that I haven't mentioned is Tony, because you probably want Tony in the forward slot, given that Brentford have got doubles coming up.
Yeah, this is my conundrum. I really want Haaland and Tony, and then I want Maddison as well, but I think I'm willing to wait on him. It's tough, isn't it? We talked about the forwards before. It's all change, isn't it, Jules?
It's quite fascinating, isn't it? Because when you start the season, you just, you know, there will be injuries, but you just don't know how much they will impact the game. And we never thought, because last season we never really were without Erling Haaland, you never thought that at some point this season you could not pick neither KDB, Haaland, Son or Salah at the same time, which when you think about it are the four biggest players really that we have, not just in the game, but also in the Premier League. And yet at some point, all of them were at the same time. So you just need to restructure your team and you need to almost try to plan for when those would come back at some point. And now they start to get back. And then the nightmare is going to be even more when both Son and Salah will be back and fit and ready to play, because then what do you do? So It's just great. We know that Haaland has to come back, of course. It's a no-brainer. It's very simple. It's just how and who you bring or who you have around him, alongside him. Who are your premiums? Do you keep some money in the bank for Salah and Son when they come back? Do you go all in right now? Because it's also a key time in the season to try to climb back up in all the rankings, all your mini leagues, have all those green arrows now, while Salah and Son are not there, really, and try to find differential and try to find a way of climbing back up the rankings. So it's just, I think it's great.
Okay, so plenty to think about. Maybe on a future podcast, we can also take a look at who the best midfielders are to own as well, because that is another headache. On to differentials of the week then. Sam, well done. You picked Maddison last week. 7 points and assist and 2 bonus points for him. Jules, do you want to move on?
Yes, please.
Wananote, 1 point, subbed off on 46 minutes. Ian's pick is Kudus, who is yet to play. A reminder, a differential is under 10% owned, and every week we challenge Jules, Sam and Ian, when he's here, to pick a differential for you guys to pick who is going to return in game week 23. Come on then, who am I going to go for first? Go on, Jules, you're always confident. Who you got?
Yeah, so I think when someone has an amazing performance, an amazing game, that confidence and everything is worth a lot as a professional footballer. So Adebayo for Luton, who's just scored an amazing hat-trick, really, against Brighton. Only owned by 1.2% of the managers, it will cost you nothing. 4.8 million. He's on fire. He's scored 8 goals already this season. Okay, his XG is much lower, 5.1. So he's clearly overperforming. But it doesn't matter. I love what he brings to the game. He might not be everybody's cup of tea in the style of play that he has, but he's strong. He's so good in the air, obviously. He has almost six touches in the opposition box per game, which I think is a really high number to have. He's very much involved. We know how good on set pieces. Luton are all those crosses, Doughty, Barkley, all of that. So it's a really, really good pick, I think. 0.51 goal per game this season. Really, really high. They play Newcastle away, which is not easy, but we saw what Chris Wood did to Newcastle with Forest not that long ago. Similar kind of striker. So I think Adebayo could also have a really good afternoon of the week.
Quite like that pick. Sam, what about you?
I'm going to take a little bit of a risk and pick a player that has...
I've taken him already. You can't have one.
I don't think anyone's going to be queuing
that
up.
Level of risk. No, that's only you, Jules. No, I'm going to take a little bit of a risk and pick a player that hasn't yet played in game week 22, which I don't like doing because obviously you never know what might happen. But I'm going to go for James Ward-Prowse. He's going to cost you $6 million. And he's owned by 8.5% of the game. He plays Manchester United in game week 23. He's got 2 goals and 2 assists against them in the Premier League. United have just 1 clean sheet since game week 14. And over the course of this season, they've conceded 92 shots from set pieces, which is the 7th most in the league. And of course, who do you find on set pieces at West Ham? Well, it's James Ward-Prowse. He's taken 28 free kick crosses so far this season. Only Kieran Trippier has had more for Newcastle with 30. And of those, 11 of them have been successful. That's the most of any player in the league so far. 4 goals and 6 assists so far this season. James Ward-Prowse.
I think he would have been more popular this season had the midfield slots not been so precious.
I agree. Yeah, I think so. I think he would have been a player that people would have moved towards. And maybe because Bowen and Kudos have actually been playing really well as well, people have kind of erred towards them. But at his price point, he's really nice and cheap. And had we not had maybe a Cole Palmer or an Anthony Gordon down there as well, I think he would have been much more popular than he has been.
I feel sorry for James Ward-Prowse. I feel like he's constantly overlooked, like when it comes to England, even in FPL as well. But he's a brilliant player who could provide plenty of returns this week. So that's differentials of the week. Who is the best captain of the week? I wish Ollie Watkins was in better form than just scoring this week, because I would love to captain him away at Sheffield United. I think for me, it's going to be a City player. Jules, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, Watkins is a good shot, to be fair, Kelly. But if you bring Haaland, even if he's not starting and we don't know exactly how many minutes he will play, or KDB, I think it's hard maybe not to. KDB clearly getting much better, and clearly you can see the fitness is there. Everything about his game is there, certainly for at least 70 minutes. Diogo Jota has done so well for me that, again, I think even if he's away at Arsenal, I'd be very tempted to just keep the armband on his arm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, Joel, Sam, that surprised you, did it?
All right.
Yeah, against Arsenal, it did. It did surprise me a bit. I find that game really difficult to call what might happen in that Arsenal-Liverpool game. So play the players, of course, but I don't know if I'd want to captain somebody in it.
Sam?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I just think that the form that Jota is on, although he seemed to have a little...
At the end
of that game. So it's something that we need to keep an eye on.
Who are you going to captain, Sam?
I think I'm going to stick it with KDB again. Even if Haaland comes in, I think I'm probably going to leave it with KDB, because we've had the start out of him now. It's 5 days until Man City play again on Monday evening. So long enough recovery that I'm not necessarily worried about him needing less minutes again in that one. Though that's probably... jinx that one, hasn't it? But yeah, I think it'll probably be him. I will be tempted, because I'm going to have to bring in Haaland this week, and I will be tempted to hand him the band, but I think I'll leave it with KDB.
So you're bringing in Haaland this week? You're not willing to wait, Sam?
Oh, good question.
Sam, you know how this podcast works. We do captains, then we do transfers. You led me onto that perfectly.
Yeah.
I think so. I really want to do Gross to Madison quite badly, but... I think the priority will be buying in Haaland. So I'm probably going to do that. Probably for Alvarez, because although Alvarez will start if Haaland doesn't, as Jules said, as soon as Haaland comes on, Alvarez's position will change. And longer term, I don't think I want Alvarez as one of my City three. I only had him to cover out the Haaland injury.
Yeah, I've got 3 City at the moment, which means that I kind of have to sell Alvarez to get to Haaland or take a -4. Because I've got Foden, but I want to do, not copying you, I want to do Foden to Madison really as well. So it's just working out when I do it. I think I might wait another week, which could be quite scary.
For Madison or for Haaland?
I think I might hold this week. Or I'll panic like I normally do and just do it anyway. Jules, what about you? What are you doing?
Yeah, Haaland, for sure. I've got 2 free transfers. I've got 13.5 million in the bank.
What?
Thank you very much.
Some planning. Some planning's gone on.
It's all about forward planning, this show. You know that, this game. So I can even do KDB and Haaland has two free transfers this week, which blows my mind too, to
Who
be fair.
Not just you, girl.
Me too.
Wowzers.
Darwin.
I don't know. It could be no. Darwin has to stay.
I feel like you have to. You have to keep him now for the
forever.
Purposes of the
He's
pod.
My boy.
Yeah. You have to have him the whole season.
Yeah, and he draw horses as well. So, like, what is there not to like about Darwin Núñez? I don't know. So he's staying. So he'll probably be Solanke, and then I could do Foden for KDB. I need to already plan for the blank for Liverpool because of Jota and Darwin. So I need to strengthen the bench as well. So I'll see who the second transfer is. But the first one would be Haaland for sure.
Are you going to ask him it then, Sam? I thought you were going to ask.
No, I was... No,
she's impressed. She's just
not.
Impressed.
She had a question
fine,
and
you know.
She stopped herself.
No, no. She, her face says like, wow, yeah. Well done, Jules. That's pretty impressive.
I'm not sure it did say that. I was actually going to ask about Foden because selling Foden's interesting to me because both of you have now said that.
He's just, he plays on the right-hand side because KDB is back now and I think his best position is centrally. He has less of an impact on the right. Although we saw the assist that he obviously gave, but it's a similar assist to Maddison. It's not really an assist, let's be honest. It's a sideway pass for Rodri. That's what it is. So
I guess it just wouldn't be a priority transfer for me if I had Foden.
It's just to bring KDB in, to be fair. So I can move somebody else, but I like Saka, I like Palmer. You know, I like the other, I like Jota, of course, which is my fourth midfielder, fourth starter. So yeah, I'll see.
It's similar to what you said with Haaland, Sam, that you only had Alvarez to cover that spot and that you knew once Haaland came back, it would affect Alvarez's position. It's kind of the same with Foden and KDB. And I only had both of them this week because it made sense to just go Salah to KDB, similar price point, knew Salah was out, wanted Foden for Burnley. But I knew that I wasn't going to want Foden long-term and probably the same with Alvarez. So yeah, a couple of headaches there, but it doesn't feel nice selling a City player because it feels like, as we saw with Ian, whichever City player you sell, they're probably going to return, aren't they? So
yeah, for sure.
It's tricky. Anyway, that is where we will leave it, guys. Thank you very much. The best of luck this week. A reminder, if you haven't joined our FPL Pod Mini League, the code, which I definitely know off by heart by now, is IB3WLK. It is a Saturday morning deadline for Game Week 23. It's a quick turnaround, guys. So set those alarms, 11 a.m. UK time. That's 90 minutes ahead of Spurs' trip to Merseyside to face Everton. The Fantasy Show will return this week. Ian is in the studio again. Sam, I'll be back one day to join you because it's going to be you this week, but Ian Irving still covering me there. Off the Bench, we'll be back next week with Johnny and Praz taking us through the key talking points of Game Week 23. And as always, we'll be back with you, the three of us, next Thursday. We look forward to you joining us then. The best of luck, guys. See ya.